On September 17, 1940, a British passenger liner, the SS City of Benares, was torpedoed by a German submarine. It was carrying 400 passengers to Canada, including 90 children escaping the German Blitz. Tom Nagorski has based his new book, Miracles on the Water, on first-hand accounts of survivors of the disaster, including the author's great uncle. Mr. Nagorski, the winner of 6 Emmys and a DuPont Award, is a senior broadcast producer at ABC World News Tonight. His book is published by Hyperion, and it is with great pleasure that I welcome to my show today. Hello.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Did you first hear about this from your great uncle?
I did, although I heard it as a child I can't remember the specific one, but at some holiday dinner with Polish family. He was from Warsaw originally, as were many of my dad's relatives. And so what I remember is the story of my great-uncle having been in a shipwreck, having been in a lifeboat for some time, and essentially having been given up for dead.
Is it true that his wife first heard about the story when she read his obituary in the newspaper?
She knew there was a problem. This is another piece of family lore, and she was always fond of saying that she never lost faith. There were, it was wartime. You got the news when you got the news, and sometimes that was pretty late. But she was without a clue as to what had happened to her husband for many days.
You served as the ABC news producer in Berlin and Moscow. Is it possible to live in those cities and not think a lot about World War II?
No, impossible.
So is that what got you going on this book, or was it your memory of what your great uncle had talked about?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. To be honest, when I was in Berlin and Moscow, I was running around the world so much that I don't think I had time. I mean, other than, as you say, it's in your mind all the time. No, I had a pretty profound interest. I don't think I could help having it. I had 2 European parents and a family that was, it was more of a, it felt like a more recent memory for us. But I only got into this in the last 5 years when my great uncle's daughters just happened. I asked a little bit more about this ship story, and that's how I came to know that my great uncle's story in sort of larger tapestry form was about these kids who'd been on that ship.
Well, they were 90 of the 406 crew and passengers aboard. And were they? And they were traveling as part of an initiative of the British government called the Children Overseas Reception Board. Was this one of the first ships that had been planned for the program, or had it been going on for a while?
The program was begun that summer, 1940, in July. It was set up basically as an opportunity for children of less well-to-do families in Great Britain to at least afford them the opportunity to send their kids somewhere. There were rich families, basically, who had the chance to send their kids to estates and to other countries. It was immensely popular, among other things, to Winston Churchill's great dismay. He thought it was a terrible signal to be sending to the rest of the world, to the Germans, in no small measure.
So you're sending them to Canada because that was a friendly country
to Commonwealth countries, right? And there were thousands by then who had gone, but this was the first one that got into serious trouble.
Most of the crew members were from India. Was that typical?
Yeah, there were crew members. They were mid to sort of lower level crew. The British in their civilian liner service had employed Indians for a long time.
You've concentrated in particular on 8 passengers, including your uncle. Also a woman sent to escort the children, some of the children. Are they a representative sampling of the passenger list?
Well, no, I mean, the kids who were part of this evacuation program, one thing that attracted me to the story initially was this just unbelievable wrenching choice that the families faced, the English families, about whether to do this or not. And so you had kids who were part of the 90 you mentioned, who'd all been in homes where they had wrestled with this for weeks or months, and it was only as the bombardment got really severe that mothers and fathers said, you know what, maybe this is the best of an awful choice we're making to send them to go.
And most of them died as a result of the attack.
Most of the 90 died, although, as was made clear to me in every facet of the research, there really not one child, adult, crew member had a very reasonable hope for making it, given the circumstances. This happened in the middle of the night in the North Atlantic in mid-September with the nearest rescue vessel about 300 miles away.
One reviewer in a review that highly praised the novel, the novel, it reads like a novel because you have focused on these people, but highly praised the book, said that he disagreed with the use of the word miracle. He said this is really a tragedy. There was a miracle perhaps in one lifeboat, but this is a terrible story, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's interesting you raise that. It's not just the one lifeboat. There were more than 100 people picked up on the first day in a slew of lifeboats. And again, I come back to the point that there were 406 people on board, and by all accounts, by all assumptions, by all the hindsight that naval historians and the family members themselves, they thought you were going to have 406 out of 406 on the casualty list.
Was being torpedoed something that these passengers should have feared? Was this something German U-boats were doing a lot in the Battle of the Atlantic?
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of the adults, including my great uncle, were very, very well aware of the risk. The problem came. They were escorted by a British destroyer, which was common, to roughly a 500-mile marker out west, and that was deemed in mid-September 1940 to be sort of the westernmost line of the theater of the maritime U-boat war. And unfortunately, I have in the research found that they really, again, it's hindsight, but they should have known there had been at least 8 or 9 other attacks west of that mark, and they should have kept that escort a little further.
Your uncle, Bohdan Nagorski, actually joked that it would be better to sleep on deck if a torpedo struck. And then the explosion occurred right after that, didn't it?
Yeah, and so obviously he knew. But there was, on the night that this happened, sadly in retrospect, and almost there was a celebratory atmosphere on board. Passengers were buying drinks at the bar. The kids were, for the first time in the 4.5 days they'd been at sea, they were told you don't have to wear your life vest tonight. So, you're right. It's a tragedy in many respects. There are the miracles, though, are profound, and they come later.
Well, your uncle actually had a pretty perilous journey even before this, hadn't he?
Yeah, and that's probably why it took me till my later years to figure out that there was a larger story here. I'm sure I'm not alone in as a child of Eastern and Central European parents who lived through this. That we had all manner of interesting war stories. He had. Along with most of my father's family, left Warsaw when the Germans invaded in September 1939.
My guest is Tom Nagorski, who's written a book called Miracles on the Water, The Heroic Survivors of a World War II U-Boat Attack. It is published by Hyperion. The Germans on the submarine Unterseeboot 48 would later be put on trial at Nuremberg for this, among other crimes against humanity. Did they realize that there were so many civilians and children on board, or did that matter to them?
Well, those are two different questions. I think to the first, they certainly knew there were civilians on board. Their charge, the U-boat commander's charge at that time, was to basically look for the largest ships incoming and outgoing in convoys and try to take them out. They later testified to being mystified as to why this one was without the protection of a destroyer, but I think they are on safe ground. One will never know, really, but the people who have survived from the U-boat crew, some are still alive today, maintain they certainly did not know that it was carrying children.
Were you able to interview them?
Yeah, there's a fellow named Rolf Hilse who is, I hesitate to assess his mindset, but I cannot say he's very repentant. He was the wireless operator on board the U-boat, and if you listen to him, he is very careful to say it really wasn't our fault. We could not have known. He makes a good case in that regard, but he does not make a point, even these years on, of saying we are sorry.
What were the conditions at the time? This is it's usually pretty stormy in the North Atlantic.
Yeah, it had been a very rough day on the water on the 17th. It had calmed a little bit, which probably accounts for why the U-boat got a clear shot when it did. But what was so dreadful for the kids and the adults that night is that the night itself was brutal. And, you know, you had kids hanging on to overturned lifeboats. You had lifeboats that were in relatively good shape but had taken on a lot of water, so they were immersed to some extent. And great acts of heroism, which is really the thing above all else that drew me to this, that every account, whether you go back to the papers or the reports at the time or to the people who I interviewed who are still alive today, it's just uncanny and borderline unbelievable, some of the things the kids did.
Although if you go back to the papers, you also realize an awful lot of misinformation was disseminated. Everybody assumed they'd all died.
Everybody assumed they'd all died. Almost every one of the children who made it came back to families who had received a pair of telegrams, one that said, we regret to inform you, you know, your son or daughter has been a casualty at sea. And then roughly a week later, we are thrilled to report that there have been survivors found and they are coming home.
There weren't enough lifeboats. And as you say, the conditions were terrible. You called it a recipe for hypothermia. So even if they had been wearing life jackets, they might very well have died from the cold?
Yeah. There are many circumstances that conspired to make it very tough. But there were kids who survived who were literally plucked from the water. And you didn't have much shot of getting plucked from the water if you didn't have the life vest on. So that certainly played a role.
People did incredible things. Some sang songs. One man pretended to feed and comfort a woman's dead children so she wouldn't realize that they had died.
Yeah. And a boy who I hesitate to do an interview ever without mentioning, Colin Richardson, who was 11 at the time. He was one of the few boys in his lifeboat. And he actually cradled a nurse, a woman who was sort of fading fast, and told her time and again, you know, I see a ship, it's going to be okay. I mean, the sorts of things we would associate with adult behavior. And Colin was awarded a King's Commendation for valor and bravery that had never before, and I'm not sure it has since been given to a child or even someone out of uniform.
But the real miracle, even though you said there were any number, was the survival of Lifeboat 12 and most of her 46 passengers. These are boats that were designed for 30. That's the one that your great-uncle was in.
That's right.
And they lasted for 8 days with minimal food and water. Had the lifeboats been stocked with any food and water?
They'd been stocked. This became an issue of contention afterwards as well. There were maritime regulations that demand, you know, that allotted a certain amount that you had to have. Water was the key, though. What I've never been able to come to grips with, and I think there was a problem there, is they had enough food in that boat to last for, you know, probably an order of a month. They didn't have the water. Now, granted, they had more people than they were supposed to have, but they didn't have the water to last more than about 8 or 9 days. It was, as one catalogs the heroism that was involved in that lifeboat, certainly the kids were very brave. I like to think my great-uncle acquitted himself very well, but I really, the crewmen in that boat stood out for their, it seems at first almost manic discipline that they imposed in terms of the behavior on board and the water allotments, which seemed so meager at first. But had they not done it the way they did, no question some would have perished.
What was the relationship like between the Indians and the British officers during the survival effort?
In that lifeboat, it was very good. I have been struck in the research by very strong hints of racism in other ways, or at least what strikes us today as racism in terms of the way they are referred to, the Indians. Even when you look at the ship's logs and records, you have, you know, Prashad, Baker Boy or something like that, whereas you have these lofty titles for Englishmen who were probably doing nothing more lofty on board. My great uncle did receive some credit afterwards for having been a person who just could not mediate, but could, help the children to talk to the Indians, help the Indians to talk to the crew, and that sort of thing.
Is this story better known in Canada? are the events, the tragedies of World War II that are best remembered here, the ones that that affected Americans?
It's a good question. It was more broadly covered at the time in the Canadian press. But it was a pretty big story here. And frankly, I think just because of the time it happened and the fact that so much happened in World War II afterwards, I can't say it's hugely remembered anywhere. And it's something I've been struck with because every time I tell the story, people say, well, wait a minute, I've never heard of this.
You know? And this is your first book. And now that you've written one that's been so well received after all these years in television, do you think you're going to write more books?
That's an interesting question. I'll only say that if I do, because I know she's listening, I've promised my wife that it's either ABC or the book. I can't go through another, writing a book and keep the day job. But yeah, it's been a great experience.
Tom Nagorski will be reading and signing books tonight at 7 o'clock at the Barnes & Noble store at Lincoln Square. The book, Miracles on the Water, The Heroic Survivors of a World War II U-Boat Attack, is published by Hyperion. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.